Welcome to this week's edition of Community Tides. On alternate Fridays during the noon hour, I join my co-host, Siobhan Canty, President and CEO of Jefferson Community Foundation, to explore new developments, new paradigms, and the panorama of good work and creative thinking our vibrant communities continue to do day in and day out. Hi, Siobhan.
Hi, Chris. Great to be with you.
Today we have a special guest. Give us an additional insight about a subject not only affecting our region, but communities throughout our own country. Conversations happening now will ultimately lead to important decisions that will determine the complexion of affordable housing in the future. Kim Herman has worked in affordable housing since 1969, including directing the construction of single-family homes in Virginia and Mississippi, providing technical assistance for development of both multifamily and single-family homes for farm workers and other low-income persons in the western states and across the nation. In November of 2018, Kim was inducted into the National Affordable Housing Hall of Fame. He was the executive director of the Washington State Housing Finance Commission for 35 years until the end of 2019 when he retired, and in that position, he helped finance thousands of units of housing in our state and regularly worked with Washington legislature to improve the state's housing programs and the low and moderate income families. Kim said when he was honored for the award, "I know there are thousands of highly qualified young people across the state and the country who are eager to tackle the challenges of affordability and homelessness. They inspired me to work harder every day and still enjoy the best job in the world." Kim Herman, we are honored to have you with us today on Community Tides.
Happy to be here. It's exciting to be working in Port Townsend, particularly to be working with the Housing Solutions Network on their efforts to develop more affordable housing in Port Townsend.
Kim, there are changes afoot in our city. There's code changes being considered, and I was wondering if you could start off by explaining what the city's working on and telling us what the implications for middle-income workers in our community are. Why should people care and be engaged in this?
Well, thank you, Siobhan. The reason that the city is taking on code changes is because the housing situation, particularly for low and moderate income families across Washington, has been serious for quite a few years. So in 2022, the legislature put in place a new portion of the zoning code and in the state of Washington are directions for cities on how they could plan and develop affordable housing in their cities. And that portion provided a safe harbor period for cities that do planning, like Port Townsend, to initiate and change their codes to allow a significant number of different ways to promote affordable housing within their communities. And they could do this through the adoption by planning commissions in the cities. And it was not open to legal challenge or being stopped under the normal way that such planning can be. And so consequently, what the city is doing, they started in November, is reviewing the city's zoning code to look at adopting some of the allowable changes that would promote affordable housing in Port Townsend. And they have until April 1st to be able to adopt those changes as provided in the legislature last year. And then up until April 1st, those changes can't be challenged by community members.
Kim, I just have a question, a point of clarity. Was it the intention of the state, the zoning, the safe harbor period, and all of the zone changes that they're allowing, was it the intention of the state specifically for affordable housing or for an increase in the number of units generally? I think that's what I'm kind of struggling to understand. I understand the city's going to grow and we need more density here and we need more infill. And I'm just wondering, are we required to make some of that affordable for people making $110,000 or less, or can it be any kind of housing?
The intent of the legislation was to provide a list of changes that could be adopted by planning cities which would promote particularly affordable housing. And they're the types of changes that might be objected to in under normal circumstances and subject to a lawsuit if the city tried to do it normally. There's no requirement in the legislation that the city adopt those rules, but the RCW has a long list, almost three pages of suggestions for changes that cities can do that will enhance their ability to promote affordable housing. And also talks about cities being able to develop a housing plan, which they would use to promote affordable housing.
Kim, did some of the communities actually feel rushed because they want to avoid that April 1st deadline because of the liability issues?
I don't know of any particular communities that felt rushed. You know, they would have had from, if the legislature adopted that in 2022, they would have had from June 1st, usually June 1st is when the laws take effect, unless it's an emergency law, through the balance of 2022 all the way to April 1st to do that. I don't believe, from what I've read and been told, Port Townsend didn't start until November to look at it. So that's why they're a little rushed.
Yeah, because I was thinking it's one thing to have listening sessions with the citizens, and it's a whole other thing to come up with a vote, right?
Yes, yes. And Port Townsend did have listening sessions in, December, and about 50 people turned out. 50 people and organizations came out and made a long list of 41 comments that they would like the city to think about.
Kim, following the public comments, there's a lot of interest and concern about affordable housing for people making 110% of our area median income, or 150%, and that equals $110,000 or less. And I think we have amazing organizations like Habitat and Bayside who are doing work for people making 80% of our area median income, but there's a real gap for middle income workers. And are there projects that you're seeing either in Port Townsend or around the state that our city could learn from and include in these changes? I think it's important when that's the state's intent and the community's concern to find ways to meet that.
Yeah, absolutely. There are projects going on in Port Townsend, some of which are aimed at people below 80%, but the same type of projects could very easily be done for people who are up to 150%. For example, Seventh Haven Apartments, which is an Olympia Community Action project of 43 units, a multifamily project. That's the first multifamily project in Port Townsend in 14 years. And, you know, that type of housing would be very available for people up to the price range that you mentioned. The Olympic Land Trust has, you know, a triplex and a duplex planned at Dundee Hill, which, again, could be a type of housing mentioned in the code that could be broadened and allowed in more places in the city, up to fourplex right now, that could be for families slightly higher income than 80%, 80 to 150, for example. And Habitat, of course, has got six houses underway right now, where Habitat is keeping the families under 80%, but they could certainly move up to families from 80 to 150, or another nonprofit could be able to do that, you know, in the city. So those are actual projects going on right now that are examples of what could be done.
Kim, are you saying that those models could be built affordably and maintained affordably? I think there's some debate around that.
Well, there's no question that, you know, building costs have gone up, but there are groups across the state of Washington who are building housing in the Yakima Valley. There are groups who are building single family homes for people that have been living in low income apartments who've increased their income and want to become homeowners. And there's a project that is working with them to build those homes so they can move into homeownership. There are other apartment projects. The Washington State Housing Finance Commission finances affordable housing built by for-profits and nonprofits under regulatory agreements, which put a requirement they have to be rented to people of certain income levels, and those income levels could go up to 150% of median income under certain guidelines with the commission. you know, and there are other housing authorities that are also building housing that could be affordable to families. And nonprofits play a big role in doing affordable housing because they don't have to follow as strict the guidelines as some of the housing authorities do under federal guidelines, but they can set their own guidelines, but they can still be controlled through regulatory agreements.
You know, Kim, that leads me to, it's a favorite topic of mine, and that is in a creative community that cares, there's a possibility on many levels, in many different ways, in many different things, to create templates that can radiate out across the nation, as a matter of fact. As you have your ear to the ground statewide, what kinds of communities have been successful? I mean, post-decision-making.
In terms of the post-decision-making, I'm not sure because I haven't looked at that across the state, but just knowing what can be done, you know, affordable housing, particularly in the area of multifamily development, has been going on for years and can be done very, very efficiently and effectively with through nonprofit ownership that can be dedicated to different income levels. And as I said, single family home ownership can also be, you know, under different auspices and be part of a housing plan that can be done by nonprofits, not as much for profits, but nonprofits can get single family. For example, Governor Lowry, after he left office, had an interest in providing ownership for agricultural workers where he grew up. He bought lots. He hired a contractor after taking bids to build houses. And then he helped the agricultural workers buy those houses through a federal program and become homeowners. I mean, that's an interesting example where he did that through a nonprofit organization he set up. It's a model that could be done by any nonprofit organization. So there are lots of different models and different ways to create affordable housing, whether it's for low-income or middle-income persons.
So when we think about this deadline of April 1st, what are some of the things, I mean, to be clear, all of these steps could be taken after April 1st. It's just they're protected under the safe harbor clause until April 1st. So the opportunity exists beyond April 1st. What are some of the things that you would ask the city to consider in order to ensure affordability is created by the changes they're going to make?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And there's some real good examples. For example, there's adjustments that could be made in lot sizes that are available and how they can be used. The setback distances from the road and the side yards in Port Townsend are very high. They could be loosened up significantly, or you could allow certain types of housing right on the lot line, which is done in other places. The square footage allowances that are allowed on multiple lots in a given area, instead of measuring what's done by buildings, you could measure by square footage total coverage. That would allow more buildings to be built. They're looking at a designation of unit lots, which is a term that they use, which would allow what I was just talking about, that rather than looking at individual residences and limiting the number of residences, you would have the opportunity to use the unit lots, which uses expanded square footage allowances to do. There's also cottage housing. There's changes they could make to lessen the cost of cottage housing or courtyard housing, as some people call it, which is very popular with seniors, houses around courtyards, grass courtyards. And then there's a proposed change to allow the development of temporary workforce housing for commercial and industrial zones, so employers could produce housing to employ their own employees. I just heard the other day that one of the maritime associations bought an old hotel in town so they could house their workers, which is quite a step.
Mm-hmm. Kim, we have seen, thank you for those great examples and ideas. We have seen a number of times in our community where developments were called affordable when they were approved, and then now they're on the market for $700,000 or $800,000 or more. What specifically can we do as a community, and what can the city do to ensure that those units are available for $400,000 or less and remain affordable for working people?
I would add that the bogey word right now is market rate.
Yeah. Well, first of all, you can, through a land trust or a housing trust, for example, where when a house gets built and then is sold, you can take the cost of the land out of it, which means the person that buys the home is renting the land from the land trust. So the land cost is out of the deal. And you can also put limits on the appreciation that can happen by the homeowner so that when they sell the house, it remains affordable and it doesn't go up as fast as the market. So that's the way you can do it. There's a program that's being done in Bremerton that's been done there for years called self-help housing, where families help build their own homes. And by helping build their own homes under construction supervision, you know, they can save anywhere from a third to 50% of the cost of the house originally. If you did that also with a land trust or a housing trust, where there's a limit on how much they could sell for, even though you let them get some appreciation out of it, you could keep that house affordable for a very long time. So those are just a couple of quick examples. And then in multifamily, you know, there are places in the United States, similar to the Housing Finance Commission. The Housing Finance Commission requires regulatory agreements for for-profits for 40 years. There are some places around the United States where that's extended to 60 or even 100 years. So that means that the rents, while they can go up, they can't go up astronomically.
So we can do this. We have ways, we have pathways we can take. And I just think it's so encouraging that our city is considering these questions. And in addition to doing the Evans Vista project, I think, you know, it's great to see some action happening. In closing, Kim, what would your advice be to us as a community, including the city, about next steps?
I think one of the things is the city, after April 1st, should look around at what some of the other cities have done in Washington. There's a lot of examples. I think for citizens, the thing is to, one, make sure the city does what they advertise they want to do in Evans Vista in terms of affordable low-income and middle-income housing. They have plans to build up to 100 units for people up to 120% of median, and keep the pressure on them in terms of the changes that are being made in the zoning code and the housing plan that reflects the real intent to build more affordable housing for middle-income people as well as low-income people.
Kim Herman, thanks so much for joining Siobhan and I on Community Tides. Former Executive Director of Washington State Housing Finance Commission for 35 years and still active in helping us come up with solutions to affordable housing. Thanks so much, Kim.
Thank you, Kim.
Bye, Siobhan.
Bye, Chris.
My pleasure.